Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Northwest Innovation Works, a company controlled by the Chinese government, seeks to take advantage of Washington State's cheap natural gas, water, and electricity in order to manufacture methanol for export to China. Their proposal would include a 90-acre methanol refinery at the Port of Calama, a massive new dock and dredging in the lower Columbia River, and a 3-mile-long pipeline through Cowlitz County. If built, Calama's small-town charm and tightly-knit community would be transformed into another industrialized spigot for the export of fossil fuels. This morning, we talked with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia River Keeper, who is working closely with dozens of community members in Calama, concerned about this proposed methanol refinery in the Columbia River. Jasmine, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And we need to get your mic up.
Yes, thank you for having me this morning.
It's great to have you. We've been talking on the show for a couple of years now about the scores, or maybe not scores, but nearly scores of these proposed fossil fuel projects all around the Northwest. And the biggest one that's the best known is, of course, the Vancouver oil by train terminal that's being proposed to be the largest oil by train terminal in North America. We've talked a lot about coal exports. We've talked about LNG proposed import and then export in Astoria and in Coos Bay. This methanol refinery seems to have slipped under the radar. So why is that? Why have we been focusing on all these other projects? And this, it turns out, would be the largest methanol refinery in the world.
Yes, it would be the largest methanol refinery in the world, located, you know, about 30 miles north of Portland, on the Calama, in the town of Calama on the Columbia River. And, you know, honestly, it was proposed in 2014 at the same time that, you know, we were in the peak of the Moro Pacific coal export victory here in Oregon, coming on the heels right after the big public hearings in Longview about Millennium. We were just learning about this thing called crude by rail and the impacts it would bring to the community. And this company came in very quietly under the radar and got this project moving. You know, one of the other reasons that, you know, all eyes didn't move to Calama first is actually all eyes went to Tacoma. The same company that is proposing this methanol refinery in Calama was proposing a methanol refinery in Tacoma that was actually twice the size. Recently, the residents of Tacoma scored a huge victory after they exposed, you know, the enormous risks of a methanol refinery in their community to such a degree, to such an extent that Northwest Innovation Works just simply packed up their bags and left. A huge victory. And so, and that's, you know, when they shifted their focus really to Calama.
So do they have actually, at the time, they were planning to build two refineries, one in Calama and one in Tacoma?
Actually, their plan is to build was to build three. The spots they chose were the Port of Tacoma, the Port of Calama, and Port Westward, which is owned and operated by the Port of St. Helens near the town of Clatskanie. We haven't seen any movement or any indication that the Port Westward proposal is you know, moving forward, or we're not quite sure. You know, that's in kind of a stagnant mode. But after the defeat of their proposal in Tacoma, all, you know, hands were on deck for them to make sure that Calama moved forward.
Well, Tacoma is a city that has a long history of being industrialized, being polluted. In fact, my second radio documentary was about toxic waste disposal in the Northwest, and I focused a lot on Tacoma. And at that time, the Asarco plant was like pumping all kinds of noxious fumes into the air in Tacoma. So I think the residents of Tacoma, once Asarco closed and the city started to clean up, they learned their lessons about industrialization. So I could see why they had just a strong force to come together to fight this proposed methanol refinery. Calama is a very different place. How would you compare Calama with Tacoma?
Oh, Calama is an amazing town. There are no stoplights. There are, you know, your 1950s burger bar still exists. You know, the best place to get sandwiches are, you know, next to the antique malls. And it's a very outstanding little town. The Calama River is such a gem for swimming holes, for fishing. You know, folks in Calama love their town. And it's a wonderful place. They have great access to not only the Columbia, but the Calama River. And people have a really strong ethic of, you know, what it means to be good stewards of their area.
Well, one of the things that have always struck me about Kalama, because as you go through Kalama, and you get to see the whole town just about as you're driving by on I-5, but it's off up on the hill. Mm-hmm. And there's something really, it's more than charming. It has a sense of being really rooted in those hills. And there's no big box stores. It seems like in many ways it's the same town it was when I moved here in 1971, and probably it was in 1921, and many of the same structures are still there. Mm-hmm. So how would this methanol refinery have challenged kind of the ethos of Kalama?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'll draw a comparison for you. One of the things that that is one of the precious things about Kalama is they have this outstanding totem pole on their waterfront. They have a beautiful waterfront park, and right at the entrance of it is this 145-foot totem pole. And the proposed methanol refinery would construct a smokestack that is 245 feet tall. So you have right now their iconic waterfront structure being this 145-foot totem pole. If the refinery were built, their new iconic waterfront structure would be a 245-foot smokestack. So you can see the direction that this refinery would take the city of Kalama.
Well, how did people, how did they first of all find out about it? And then what was the first response when people started learning about this proposed refinery?
Mm-hmm. So it folks really started to pay attention. Well, first, there was a small group of people who were paying attention many years ago, and those were the folks who are impacted landowners along the proposed pipeline route. So Northwest Innovation Works needs a new pipeline through Cowlitz County to supply the refinery with natural gas. And people along the pipeline route have been on the front lines fighting this, you know, for many years. And one of those entities that are, one of the pipeline fighters is the Mount Pleasant Pioneer Cemetery. Mount Pleasant is a pioneer cemetery in rural Cowlitz County, and Williams, the pipeline company that would be building the pipeline, has proposed to, to route it right through the cemetery's property. And so they have been working on this for years. And then it wasn't really until the draft environmental impact statement came out back in early spring that the rest of the community actually realized that this was happening.
I want to actually get back a little bit and talk about what methanol is, because I think for a lot of people, it's not a real familiar fossil fuel. So what is methanol, and why is it of such concern that it would be refined in Kalama?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the end goal for this refinery is more plastic, products being produced for consumers to then, discard and clog up the oceans. So the methanol would come in from fracked sites in Canada and in the United States, would be refined into methanol in Kalama, and then shipped overseas to Chinese manufacturing plants, where it would be then further refined into a product that is used to make plastic.
So methanol itself, actually, it's a form of alcohol. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we know ethanol winds up in our gas tank. So what's the difference like between ethanol and methanol?
Well, ethanol comes from corn, and methanol comes from natural gas.
So it's methanol, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. So if we build more, methanol refineries, we will have more fracking for natural gas. That's the link we're trying to draw here. Some methanol can be used as a fuel in, jets and speedboats and things, but this particular methanol refinery is being built for the sole purpose of plastic production.
Well, the other interesting thing is, of course, the Chinese connection. So what is the Chinese connection with this?
Mm-hmm. So the company behind this project is being backed by the Chinese government. It's the Chinese Academy of Sciences that's really bankrolling this project. So, we have some unusual research to do. This company is coming to the West Coast of the United States because we have inexpensive gas prices and we have abundant water supply. And that's why they're here. They're not here to make our communities stronger, cleaner, or safer. They're here because we have some resources that they want.
So why couldn't they do this in China?
the natural gas prices in China simply, it wouldn't be possible. You know, Asian gas prices are something around $16 per cubic feet here in the U.S. or in the West Coast. You know, we pay around $4 to $6.
And that's why the gas companies want to have these LNG terminals on the West Coast to export, because, in fact, they're not concerned about having a larger supply of domestic natural gas. They want to make money, and they can't make any money in this country.
Exactly.
So this is all part of China just... It's interesting, actually, though. I mean, I think it's kind of the reverse side or the converse of the LNG question, that they're coming here to use our abundant natural gas than to create resources that they'll use for manufacturing in China. Well, actually, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, who's a senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, and we're talking about the proposed methanol facility refinery that would be built in Kalama, Washington, just about 30 miles north of Portland, and why a lot of people there are very concerned about it. So you were telling me before we came on about the greenwashing of this project. So we hear people say, well, methanol is a bridged fuel, though obviously it's not going to be a fuel, and that seems to be getting obscured, and that this is going to be a cleaner process for making plastic than the one that they're already using in China. So it'll be good for overall global greenhouse gas emissions, and that it's good for the river, it's good for the community. Who is behind this propaganda, basically?
Right. Well, first, let's just lay out that that natural gas, which is what this methanol will be coming from, is not a bridge fuel. We know that now. That was a very, very poor, you know, marketing scheme that, you know, some people bought into decades ago who have now learned their lesson. So to be, you know, to be saying that this is the cleaner, greener way of making plastics, well, there is no cleaner, greener way of making plastics. You know, we have recycling capabilities. We have plastic alternatives. Those are the things that are cleaner and greener than making more plastics. The company Northwest Innovation Works, when they first sort of made their big debut in Kalama, they did it under the guise of a greenwashing group called Citizens for a Green Economy, and all of their all of the supporters of the project wore these green shirts with a planet smiling and trees growing out of their heads, and they were, you know, talking about how great methanol was. The methanol was, you know, production is, you know, for the environment. Why we need, you know, plastics from natural gas, and that's great for the environment, and that was quickly exposed. That
where did these people come from? were they local Kalama people?
Most of them were not local Kalama folks.
They're bust in as they are for all these other hearings. So let's talk about some of the dangers of methanol and why is this plant particularly scary to people who would be living within a few miles of it.
Yeah, well, we can start with the site. The site where Northwest Innovation Works wants to build the world's largest methanol refinery is a 90-acre site that is currently that has been used for the past 35 years as dredge spoils. So when you think of dredge spoils, think sandy soils that it comes up from the bottom of the river and just gets piled and compacted. You know, the draft environmental impact statement for this project, you know, stated that in an earthquake, this is, you know, moderate to likely, you know, liquefaction risks. So why you would store something that is explosive, you know, on dredge spoils is beyond me. And that was a similar problem that we had with the LNG export facility as well.
I mean, the one in Astoria.
Correct.
Well, it's a problem. Actually, there was also the question of the tsunami.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that that's a factor that we need to be taking very seriously with all these plans to develop fossil fuel facilities in the Northwest, that we now know beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are heading towards a very major earthquake in this region sometime in the next 50 to 200 years. But it, I guess I saw, I think it's in your report, 43% that of a chance that there'll be this 9.0 earthquake by within 50 years. So obviously we have to, there's a lot of storage already. I mean, it makes one very nervous to think about going through St. John's in Portland and thinking about all the gasoline and oil storage that's along the Willamette River there. So it's bad enough what we have. Why would we want to add any more to it?
Right. We should not continue to make the same mistakes that we made before we knew the science.
So what would happen if there were an earthquake and there were these 200 plus foot, well, that's a smokestack, but then these huge storage facilities with all this methanol. Why is it so risky to be storing methanol on an area that could liquefy in an earthquake?
Mm-hmm. Well, methanol is highly flammable. You know, think of it as more, it's more flammable than natural gas because it's been further refined. It burns clear. So you often feel the methanol fire before you see the methanol fire. So that's an extreme danger.
What do you mean about burning clear? There's no smoke? Or?
Yeah, it's not this yellow-blue flame that we're used to seeing.
Right.
When you see it, you run the other way. In a methanol fire, you actually don't see it. You feel it. And so you could walk into it. You know, theoretically, you could walk into a methanol fire and not know.
Until you burn to death.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still kind of unsure. So methanol is a vapor, but it also can be put into liquid form.
Correct.
So, I mean, I'm thinking in terms of it being equivalent to ethanol. Ethanol is actually a liquid, isn't it?
So it's a liquid, and then when it gets released into the environment, it can vaporize.
Well, like gasoline does,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yeah.
So it's very volatile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, methanol, if you inhale it, you have extreme, you know, health risks, you know, and impacts. It can, you know, and we're talking storing, you know, millions and millions of gallons of methanol in tanks that could leak, that could rupture, and methanol vapors, you know, spreading throughout the community.
I mean, in fact, I mean, I would imagine that methanol is far more poisonous than ethanol, actually, if it's compared. I mean, methane is one of the most poisonous gases on the planet, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that we talk about the beauty and the cleanness of natural gas. We don't talk about just what a toxic substance it is. Also, natural gas is kind of one of these nice misnomers for something that's actually methane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure there's a whole lot of difference between natural gas and methane.
Yeah, I couldn't get down into the details on the radio, but it's a very volatile and you know not very clean and green scenario.
So there's the earthquake danger. What are some of the other concerns about storing it in that place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things is the Kalama River. Folks who fish on the Columbia know the area around Kalama to be outstanding fishing, ascending for its fishing. Not only on the Columbia, but the Kalama River itself. The proposed refinery is less than half a mile from the mouth of the Kalama River. This is, you know, people come from all around the world and all around the region to fish in this area, to fish on the Kalama River and on the Columbia, especially right now. I think I know dozens of people who are down at Buoy 10 right now limiting out on their salmon. This facility requires a new dock on the Columbia River. And, you know, that's a new dock a half mile from the mouth of the Kalama River, you know, is a risk to our salmon populations, to the smelt that live in the area, to sort of the entire habitat around that you know, critical pocket.
So what is it about building a dock that would be such an mm-hmm. endangerment to the salmon?
So we have the dock construction itself, you have more pilings, you have lots and lots of noise, you know, think of, you know, orcas don't like, you know, loud noises. Well, neither do other aquatic species. So, also new docks on the river, you know, create sort of unnatural habitat for predatory, species to come in and get those little critters that live along the smelt and whatnot. And the thing about this facility is it actually doesn't need a new dock. And this is something that we've been trying to bring up with the Port of Kalama time and time again is Northwest Innovation Works claims they need a new dock. The Port of Kalama is applying for federal funding to give them their new dock. And directly adjacent to the facility is an existing dock that had zero vessel calls last year. And so this is kind of all under the guise of just getting more industrialization on the Columbia River in places that we don't actually need it. If they really, really wanted this project, they would use the existing dock that is already there instead of building a brand new one.
And then there's the issue about dredging the Columbia River.
Yeah, of course. You know, the more we see dredging on the Columbia, the more we destroy habitat. That area, at the mouth, near the mouth of the Columbia, or the Kalama River on the Columbia, it has some great little pockets of islands, and that's all wonderful habitat. that we probably should be disturbing as little as possible, and not simply adding docks that are not actually, you know, going to be serving a purpose when you have vacant docks right adjacent to the facility.
Now, getting beyond the dock and the storage facilities and all that, there's this pipeline that you mentioned. And when you say the words natural gas pipeline, well, in my mind, I think explosion. And I didn't realize until I was reading your white paper that, in fact, the explosion that remains in my memory so strongly, the one in North Bonneville a number of years ago, which burnt down this brand new hot springs resort that had been just built, that's the same company that's been building pipelines all around in Washington State with some very dangerous results.
Right. So the company behind the pipeline is a company called Williams, and in Cowlitz County, and people in Cowlitz County are very familiar with Williams, and they're unfortunately familiar with Williams because they've already experienced two pipeline explosions from a Williams natural gas pipeline in 1995 and in 1997. Two Williams pipelines exploded in Cowlitz County. The 1997 explosion was actually quite close to where they want to put this new Kalama Lateral, you know, Northwest Innovation Works pipeline. And so folks who live, who are now being impacted, you know, having their properties threatened by a pipeline, they remember evacuating their homes in 1997 when a Williams pipeline exploded. And what's happening now? Now Williams is trying to come, you know, within a few hundred yards of their own homes.
Well, why is it that they, I mean, it's only a 3-mile-long pipeline, so why is there so much concern about 3 miles when we have, like, hundreds and hundreds of miles of natural gas pipelines all around the region?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that people simply people who've seen pipeline explosions are rightfully justified in not wanting one a few hundred feet from their living room. You know, it's an impact to your property values. It's an impact to your peace of mind. You have a permanent 50-foot easement along your property where you can't build. You can't grow trees. You can't put a garden there. That is essentially Williams Pipeline territory. And I would venture to say that I probably couldn't find anyone who would welcome that on a piece of land that they have invested so much time and energy into.
Yeah, well, for, you know, people to kind of visualize what a 50-foot easement is like, that's the width of an average Portland lot, and it's a little bit larger than my lot. So it's like if you think about having your whole backyard not be available to you because there's this pipeline. It also gives you a sense of how close the pipeline might be to your back door.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I started learning about how dangerous natural gas pipeline were and how explosive they were, I just wonder, why do we continue to build them? I mean, it makes me, or why is it that they're so dangerous? I mean, why do they leak and why do they explode?
Mm-hmm. That is a great question. You know, I've asked, you know, Williams engineers when they've come to community meetings, you know, did you learn your lesson? And they said, oh, we have learned our lesson. And I said, why? How can we guarantee that you've learned your lesson? And then a few, you know, weeks later, we see a pipeline explosion. And it's uncharted territory. It's simply dangerous technology that, you know, folks shouldn't have to, you know, accept on property that they intended to, you know, raise their family on or retire on, and, you know, live out their lives. It's not a risk that that people should be forced to bear. And Williams, the pipeline company, you know, will, if necessary, use eminent domain to make sure that pipeline goes through people's private property. And you know, an eminent domain, you know, can be used for things like building, you know, a school or a critical access road or maybe a hospital. You know, maybe we can come to terms that these are appropriate uses of eminent domain. But I do not think that building a natural gas pipeline to ship methanol to China to make plastics is an appropriate use of eminent domain. I think that's a time that we need to call into question our values about what is actually for the benefit of the public and what is for the benefit of a private company or a foreign government in this case, and come to terms that this project just simply doesn't meet the standards.
Well, I think about the assurances that we get from the fossil fuel industry. We've learned our lessons this time. this time it won't happen
again.
How
many times have we heard that with crude by rail?
Well, I'm just thinking on June 2nd of this year, I was interviewing the spokesperson for Vancouver Energy about the crude by rail terminal that was proposed to be built. And I asked him about oil train derailments and how much of a concern it was. And he says, well, we are doing everything and working with the railroads. We can, you know, we're just as concerned as anybody else about safety. And, you know, we are doing everything state of the art. And, you know, it couldn't be any safer than it is. Next day, the train derailed in Mosier. And actually, I emailed him. I said, do you have a follow-up statement? And he deferred me to the railroads.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I thought that was a very interesting blatant example of, you know, how little control they have over the possibility of disaster. How does the community deal with this as they're going ahead in this battle?
And it's terrifying. It keeps people up at night. It keeps, you know, I get phone calls from moms wondering about, you know, where to send their kids to school. I get home, you know, calls from property owners wondering if this is actually the right place for them to retire. And it's interesting about the trains. If I'll draw a little map, or I'll try and describe a map to people. If I was standing on the Northwest Innovation Works proposed methanol refinery site, I could throw a rock and hit the rail lines that currently transport unit trains of crude oil up to the refineries in the Puget Sound. I can't throw rocks that far. If I was good at throwing rocks, I could hit the I-5 corridor. So this is a critical transportation corridor, you know, and to put something here that threatens that transportation corridor, it's a significant risk.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, who's a senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper. We're talking about the proposed methanol refinery in Klamath, Washington, which you might never have heard of. And so that's why we're talking about it today. So we were talking before we went on the air about, of all the proposals that have been flying around and some of going through the different processes to create an immense fossil fuel export infrastructure here in the Northwest. Why has this one really fallen under the radar?
Mm-hmm. You know, I hate to say it, but Calhous County has had so much on their hands, on their plates, or the Columbia River in general. In the past, you know, Calhous County is also, you know, folks in Calhous County are trying to stop the largest coal terminal in North America, Millennium.
In Longview.
In Longview. So that's 10 miles away for folks. There have also been two proposed propane export terminals in Longview and a proposed oil refinery in Longview. So folks in Calhous County haven't necessarily been at home sitting on their thumbs or, you know, like flipping through, you know, Netflix. They've been hard at work keeping dangerous and dirty fossil fuels out of their community for years, and have been doing it very well. And this project had simply, you know, stayed under the radar in a town of just a few thousand people that people didn't realize it.
Well, they've been very successful in getting this. We mentioned five projects, and now it's down to two. The only two that survived is the Millennial Bulk Coal Terminal in Longview and this methanol refinery. So at least they have more time to focus on just two projects. But it seems also that Klamath, even more so than Longview, is kind of off the radar for people in Vancouver and Portland. And you were describing how it's kind of in a media vacuum, because it's not covered by either of its closest newspapers, the Columbian or the newspaper in Longview. It's barely within the KABU reception. I hope you're listening to us up there in Klamath right now, but I know as I go through Klamath, it starts to crackle. And then I know that Oregon Public Broadcasting doesn't do much coverage of Klamath either. So is affected their ability both to find out about it and then as well to get the word out to the rest of the region about what they're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's been incredibly challenging to sort of wave the flags to get media to cover this issue. But fortunately, there are outstanding activists who live in Klamath who are fiercely protective of their community and their quality of life and the futures for their children. And they have done an outstanding job of making sure that in every way, shape, and form, people in the community know what's going on. Just just a quick, you know, update, you know, volunteers have organized, you know, mailing parties where they labeled and sealed, you know, thousands of individual letters to people in Kalama, to their neighbors in Kalama, saying, did you know this is happening? Please come and talk to us about it. You know, once a week in the mornings, as you know, most of the community goes through this one intersection, a four-way stop. There's no stoplights in Kalama. People go out waving signs and passing out flyers. People have been doing canvassing, getting the word out, you know, anywhere and everywhere. And Kalama is a hilly community, so you know, if you can think about that, that really puts into perspective how dedicated people are. So the folks who have learned the facts have become incredibly engaged and are doing, you know, I'm forever humbled by how outstanding they are getting the word out.
Well, I talked to a couple other people with Columbia Riverkeeper who raised concerns a few months ago that the Kalama was just up against much harder odds than these other communities because Northwest Innovation Works, they and the Chinese government and also the Port of Kalama seem to perceive the community as being a soft touch. We should be able to roll over them without any trouble. And that a lot of there was a lot of threats, I understood, a few months ago from people who were opposing the refinery. So is Kalama in a more difficult position that way than, let's say, people in Longview or Vancouver?
You know, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think it certainly was at the beginning when Northwest Innovation Works, you know, greenwashing group Citizens for a Green Economy was going around telling everyone that this was, you know, as great as recycling or something, you know, something great for the planet. But folks have really come around to it. And I think what really changed the debate was when Northwest Innovation Works dropped their proposed refinery in Tacoma because citizens started asking questions. You know, and instead of providing answers, Northwest Innovation Works packed up and left. And that was a huge eye-opener for the community of Kalama to say, wow, if we start asking questions, we could get this company out.
So what are the questions that need to be asked?
I think people want to ask is, one, you have this limited liability company, Northwest Innovation Works LLC, you know, and yet you're proposing this very explosive facility on dredged spoils. You know, what is the what are the limits of your insurance capabilities? What are you going to do if an explosion destroys the town of Kalama? What are you going to do if an explosion destroys, you know, the Columbia River, or a leak or a methanol spill destroys the Columbia River or the Kalama River? And what are the health impacts? You know, this 245-foot smokestack I mentioned at the beginning, you know, that will be burning. And that will be releasing, you know, chemicals throughout the, you know, refinery process. What are those chemicals? What is the impact to the air? What is the impact to the quality of life? You know, already the diesel particulate matter from this facility is extremely high. And why isn't there a health impact assessment to make sure that the community isn't going to be negatively impacted by this project? So people are starting to ask about health, they're starting to ask about water, and they're starting to ask about quality of life. And so far, Northwest Innovation Works hasn't really met folks with sufficient answers.
You think there's a chance that they'll pack up if the questions get heated enough?
I certainly hope so. I really don't think that a project like Northwest Innovation Works methanol refinery is the right place, you know, is properly matched with the community of Kalama. And you know, it's not necessarily just Kalama that should be paying attention to this. The amount of natural gas that this facility would use would increase Washington State's gas consumption by 1/3. That's huge. That's significant. So that's all of Washington's gas, you know, that is consumed in homes and, you know, commercial purposes, jumping by a full third because of this one single project. So the entire state of Washington should be, you know, focusing on Kalama right now, because any sort of green or green initiatives that the state is providing, you know, we're risking just washing away.
Well, it's also going to be really increasing Washington State's greenhouse gas emissions I would say, since we've come to the conclusion that natural gas is not all that clean.
Right.
Well, what can people do to help to stop this facility from becoming a reality?
Yeah. Well, folks outside the region are incredibly, you know, needed. It's always been helpful to have communities from throughout the Pacific Northwest help impacted communities. You know, we've asked people to come to Vancouver, to Astoria, to Longview for public hearings and meetings and rallies, and that's no different with this case, with this campaign. And so I'll tell people two things. One is we're having a public rally on September 14th at 4 p.m. in downtown Kalama. It's at Totef Park, right on, you know, if you go to downtown Kalama, you cannot miss it. And we'll be, you know, highlighting some local voices from Kalama and then walking over to the Port of Kalama where everyone can give their 2 minutes of public testimony explaining why they oppose the project. So that's September 14th at 4 p.m. in downtown Kalama. And then the second thing is we're actually in a critical public comment period for this proposed refinery, and folks can submit comments through the Columbia River Keeper website under the little methanol tab. The comment period is with the county. It's their county shoreline substantial development permit, and the comment period closes on Thursday, September 1st.
Well, how much more time is there? Is there a deadline by which this decision has to be made?
So the final environmental impact statement is slated to be released sometime by the end of this year. Columbia Riverkeeper has actually challenged that entire process because we believe that the environmental review should be taken over by the Energy Facility Siting Evaluation Council. That's Washington's, you know, broad energy facility board that's doing the overview, the environmental review of the Tesoro Savage project. Right now, the agencies who are in charge of the Kalama methanol facility are the Port of Kalama and Cowlitz County. Those are the two agencies who we are expecting to look at this project under a neutral microscope to decide if it's appropriate for our community. So think about that. The Port of Kalama is slated to, you know, have millions and millions of dollars in lease fees, and then Cowlitz County, who's looking at all the taxes they're trying to get from this project. And those are the two agencies we're trusting with our environmental review. And so we challenged that and asked FSEC, the State Energy Council, to take it over.
Well, we're going to have to stay tuned on this. So let's say maybe it might be good to check back in sometime in October.
Great.
Initial period, I forget what it's called, but that basically that the certain process has to be met by, was it October 16th, but it can be extended for another year. Is that true?
Yes. So the lease with the Port of Kalama is, you know, comes up to an important deadline on October 9th. Northwest Innovation Works at that time has the option to renew for another year. And we are encouraging them to obviously not renew for that second year. The Port of Kalama itself can fully terminate and walk away from the lease October 9th, 2017.
Well, judging by what's been going on with the Port of Vancouver, I'm not exactly counting on the Port of Kalama to walk away from this. So I guess it's really important that people really start putting the pressure on and hopefully finding some way around the two existing arbiters of the decision right now. So I guess we'll see how that goes and if things have changed maybe in about 6 weeks or so.
Great.
So we will talk again really soon.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We've been talking with Jasmine Zimmer Stuckey, who's senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we're going to repeat a show from July featuring Dan Flores, author of Coyote America, about the long and twisted natural history of the coyote in North America. I'll be back live in 2 weeks with Richard Heinberg, who returns to Locus Focus to talk more about our renewable future. My engineer is Natasha Delapine. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go with some music by Farron. Thanks for listening. Strap little holes
party and rain. It's been let loose, but wearing thin, wearing thin, but biting through the shifting power. Lean.